Welcome to the night shift on this deep dive. Look, if you pull up a chair here at the nursing desk with us and you just watch the titans of the commercial real estate industry pacing the halls right now, you're going to notice something, well, deeply unsettling.
Yeah, highly disturbed behavior.
Exactly. I mean, they are pacing these boardrooms, pointing at their projections, and just straight up hallucinating these golden age cap rates that defy every mathematical reality on the planet.
It's a profound detachment from reality. I mean, you have entire investment syndicates pricing long-term care assets based on operational models that are, you know, practically science fiction at this point.
Right.
They're assuming this infinite demand from wealthy seniors and zero friction when those seniors inevitably run out of money.
Right. And that friction is exactly what we are digging into today.
Yeah.
Because we are looking at the clinical diagnostic notes from Priyanshu Adithakar.
Priya's chart.
Yeah, Pri.
Yeah.
He's a commercial real estate and hotel investment advisor. But honestly, in this market of recurring delusions, he approaches things almost like a, well, like a lead medical investigator.
He really does.
While the rest of the industry is busy, you know, polishing their pro formas and ignoring all the warning signs, Pri is performing this brutal financial and operational autopsy on a very specific critical sector, the senior housing safety net.
And his findings are bleak. I mean, he calls the overarching diagnosis acute discharge instability. And this presenting crisis, it has completely metastasized in 2026.
Yeah, metastasized is the word. Because we've all heard of patient dumping, right?
Oh, sure.
That grim, historically archaic practice where a facility might just leave a resident at a hospital ER and refuse to take them back. But Pri's documentation shows that practice has mutated.
Significantly.
Right into something much more systematic. Long-term care facilities are now routing vulnerable residents directly from their beds to emergency homeless shelters.
Well, the sidewalk.
Literally dropping them on the sidewalk in some documented cases.
Yeah.
It's chilling.
The visual is just staggering. I mean, you have a commercial real estate sector that is fundamentally designed around elder care, forcibly relocating octogenarians to the street just to protect an asset's yield.
It's very dark irony.
Mm-hmm.
Because you've got these investors sitting in a glossy office discussing high-end amenities, bespoke memory care, portfolio optimization.
All the buzzwords.
Yeah, all of it. And simultaneously, a resident in a wheelchair is being dropped at an overcrowded municipal shelter. So, I mean, let's unpack the mechanics of this.
Yeah.
How does Pri explain this shift? How does a sector move from a, you know, an isolated mechanical failure to a full-blown systemic stroke in the long-term care pipeline?
Well, to understand the stroke, you have to look at the blockages.
Yeah.
And Pri's investigation maps out three major arterial blockages. The first one he identifies is the affordable housing embolism.
Okay, break that down.
By law, a long-term care facility cannot just toss someone out the front door. They are mandated to find a safe and appropriate destination before they can formally discharge a resident.
All right, so they're legally obligated to route them to a secondary option, like subsidized senior apartments or lower-cost assisted living or family.
Exactly. But those secondary options are completely choked off. I mean, senior housing occupancy is hovering near 90% nationwide right now.
Wow.
Rents for those facilities have surged well past the rate of inflation. And the subsidized waiting lists, they're years long.
So the valve is shut.
Completely shut. So picture the facility's social worker. They get the mandate from management to clear a bed. They look at the municipal system for a safe, legal destination. And the only open intake valves left anywhere in the city are emergency homeless shelters.
So the system is backed up and the pressure just forces the most vulnerable out to the absolute only crack available.
Exactly.
But that brings us to the underlying motive here. Because, I mean, why is management ordering the social worker to clear the bed in the first place?
Ah, right. The motive.
Which is the second blockage Pri identifies in the chart. The Medicaid reimbursement gap. Or, as we like to call it here at the desk, the financial amputation.
Yeah, that's the real underlying pathology of how these facilities actually make money, because it all comes down to the pro forma.
The spreadsheet.
The spreadsheet, exactly. The financial model that dictates the property's projected cash flow. Facilities have a mathematically rigid preference for private pay residents.
That's true.
These are the seniors paying out of pocket maybe $8,000, $10,000, $12,000 a month. That revenue stream is what makes the building's valuation soar.
So the facility essentially extracts a lifetime of accumulated wealth from that resident. But, you know, people are living longer. and specialized care is incredibly expensive. So what happens when an 80-year-old resident just simply outlives their private savings after 3 or 4 years and transitions to Medicaid?
Well, the math in the facility's spreadsheet shatters. Over the last few years, the baseline operating costs for these facilities, we're talking 247 nursing staff, specialized dementia training, food, utilities, insurance liability.
All the vital signs of the building.
All of them have skyrocketed. But Medicaid reimbursement rates are fixed, and they pay significantly less than the private market rate. So suddenly, that resident flips from being a high-margin asset to a mathematical liability.
Right.
The facility is literally losing money every single day that resident occupies the bed.
So the corporate entity decides it needs to amputate the lower yielding resident. It's a purely clinical business decision to them. But wait, a facility can't just evict an elderly patient by saying, sorry, you ran out of money and our investors need a 12% return.
No, absolutely not.
State regulators would shut them down overnight.
They would. Evicting solely for financial depletion invites massive regulatory scrutiny. So operators use a loophole.
No.
Suddenly, this resident who has been living there for years without issue is diagnosed with complex behavioral needs.
Ah.
The facility claims the resident has become too difficult to manage, too aggressive, or requires a level of psychiatric care that the facility simply lacks the resources to provide.
Oh, that is so cynical. It's like an airline chronically overbooking a flight to maximize profit, knowing there aren't enough seats.
Yeah.
But instead of bumping someone and giving them a voucher, the airline just claims the passenger suddenly developed a terrible attitude and throws them out the emergency exit at 30,000 feet.
Right.
They blame the passenger for the airline's mathematically impossible business model.
That is a perfect way to frame it. And the marketing brochures and the investment pitch decks, they are way too polite to mention this dynamic. They don't model for the friction of human longevity.
Which is what makes Pree's work so critical here.
Yeah.
I mean, he spotted these symptoms in the operational data before these family portfolios were traded away.
He's the only one looking.
Yeah. And he points out that this Medicaid gap isn't just some natural market fluctuation. It was severely exacerbated by the third blockage in his notes. Legislative trauma, specifically the cascading effects of the 2025 reconciliation law.
Right, and let's look purely at the clinical mathematics of that legislation, staying entirely neutral on the politics.
Yes, just the numbers.
The law triggered significant systemic federal spending cuts to the Medicaid program. That immediately forced state governments to tighten their own budgets, which rapidly cascaded down into lower reimbursement rates for nursing homes and assisted living facilities.
So the gap between what it actually costs to keep the lights on and pay a nurse versus what the government is willing to reimburse widened into a massive chasm.
Exactly. And when that math stops adding up, the operators do not take the hit to their margins.
Of course not.
They don't lower their return expectations. Instead, the system triggers a ruthless immune response. Protect the host asset, expel the low-margin resident.
Wow.
And the most vulnerable, specifically those suffering from dementia who don't have fierce family advocates or private lawyers fighting for them, they are the first ones excised from the system.
Okay, I understand the pressure at the facility level. The math is completely broken. But here's what I just don't get. If this pipeline from long-term care to homelessness is becoming a systemic crisis, why is the broader investment community suffering from such deep institutional amnesia?
Because they don't want to see it.
But how do private equity firms and developers justify ignoring these glaring structural flaws when they underwrite a brand new 150-bed facility?
Because acknowledging the reality would mean admitting their underlying investment thesis is built on sand. I mean, Priya analyzes this from the perspective of an investment advisor, and he highlights the market's core delusion.
The hallucination.
Right. The entire sector is ignoring what he calls the shortage bottleneck. They are modeling these investments in a complete vacuum.
And the numbers Pri outlines regarding that bottleneck are honestly chilling. He notes there are currently only about 35 deeply affordable housing units available for every 100 low-income households.
Right.
The physical infrastructure required to catch these discharged residents literally does not exist.
It doesn't. The sheer lack of concrete, wood, and subsidized drywall is the exact catalyst turning a medical discharge into a homelessness catastrophe.
It's not a paperwork error.
No, there is simply no physical room at the inn. Yet the market is pricing these long-term care assets as if a robust mid-century social safety net still exists out there. They are underwriting deals with the assumption that they can seamlessly cycle out Medicaid patients to preserve their private pay ratios.
They assume a frictionless churn. Like, they assume when the resident's money runs out, the resident simply vanishes into the ether, allowing a new, wealthy senior to take the bed.
Exactly.
So let's stress test that delusion in the real world. Because Pry points to Ohio as a live clinical trial for this industry's cognitive decline.
Ohio is fascinating for this.
Right. Under federal regulations, specifically 42 CFR section 483.15, facilities in Ohio were trying to execute these financial amputations using that complex behavioral needs loophole we talked about.
But Ohio law provides this immovable friction point. It demands biological and legal reality. Legally, the facility cannot just throw their hands up and say a patient is difficult.
Yeah.
They must first attempt and document reasonable accommodations. But more importantly, they need explicit written documentation from a physician detailing exactly why the resident's medical and personal needs can no longer be met by that specific facility.
Wait, let me stop you there. Because these operators have extremely expensive legal teams. Why can't a facility just get a doctor on their payroll to sign a boilerplate discharge form saying the resident's needs exceed their capabilities?
Because of medical liability. A doctor has to put their actual medical license, their livelihood, and their malpractice insurance on the line to state on the record that an 85-year-old with Alzheimer's is somehow too dangerous or complex for a secure memory care unit to handle.
Ah, I see.
Doctors are highly reluctant to commit medical malpractice or face state medical board investigations just to save a real estate syndicate's cap rate.
So the hallucination finally hits the brick wall of liability.
Exactly. It forces the market to face its own delusions because it makes the eviction process biologically and legally impossible to underwrite.
Right.
These CRE titans, they build their models on liquidity, the ability to move tenants in and out to maximize yield. But Ohio's requirement for actual physician documentation acts as a hard stop. You just cannot spreadsheet your way around a doctor refusing to sign a fraudulent form.
So the facility is suddenly trapped. They're stuck with the Medicaid resident they were absolutely relying on evicting.
Yep.
The magic beans they used to underwrite the deal just vanish.
Yeah.
The expected 12% yield was a hallucination all along because it relied on a turnover rate that is impossible to execute in the physical world.
Exactly. The patient is crashing, the resident is trapped, and the facility is bleeding money. Which brings us to the treatment plan.
Right.
With the structural failures completely exposed by regulations like we see in Ohio, how do advocates and regulators actually stabilize a patient when the entire safety net is undergoing necrosis?
Well, you have to apply emergency measures. And Pri outlines the federal protections that act as temporary protective stents against involuntary discharge. The primary tool is the Federal Nursing Home Reform Law.
Let's walk through that.
Yeah, let's look at the specific legal friction points this law creates for operators. What is the first stent pre-identifies?
The 30-day recovery period. The law strictly mandates that a facility must provide a written 30-day notice before any involuntary move can take place.
Okay.
This prevents the literal midnight dumping of a patient at an ER. It enforces a pause, giving social workers, families, and state ombudsmen a 30-day window to try and find an alternative solution.
It's a 30-day stay of execution.
Yeah.
But I mean, 30 days isn't long when waiting lists for affordable senior housing are measured in years.
Mm-hmm.
So what happens when that clock runs out?
That is where the second stent comes in. I call it the appeal graft. Residents have a fundamental, federally protected right to request a formal hearing to challenge the discharge. And this is the part that absolutely ruins real estate projections. Requesting this hearing stays the eviction while the legal process unfolds.
Oh, wow. So if a family member or an advocate files an appeal, the facility cannot touch that resident.
Nope.
They cannot move them, and they cannot clear that bed for a higher-paying private client until the state makes an official ruling. How long can that process actually take?
A state hearing process can take 60 days, 90 days, sometimes longer, depending on the administrative backlog. And during that entire period, the financial machine just grinds to a halt.
Because they're stuck.
Yeah, the facility is losing thousands of dollars in potential private pay revenue on that specific bed. The IRR, the internal rate of return that the investors were promised, starts plummeting. Because time is the ultimate enemy of real estate returns.
So they are locked in an administrative holding pattern. But let's say the facility somehow wins the appeal, or the resident has no advocate to file one in the first place. The facility still wants to route them to a homeless shelter. How does the law address that specific pipeline?
Through the third stent, documented safety.
Right.
Dropping a resident at a homeless shelter is a direct violation of safe discharge planning. The facility is legally required to rigorously document that the destination can actually meet the resident's specific medical and personal care needs.
This feels like the ultimate reality check for an industry blinded by its own ledgers, because it is fundamentally impossible to medically document that a canvas cot in a crowded municipal homeless shelter provides adequate personal care, medication management, and safety for a dementia patient.
It is an impossible burden of proof. It is the immovable object meeting the delusional force of the market. You cannot legally prove a shelter is a safe medical discharge.
Right.
Therefore, the discharge to the shelter is illegal. Therefore, the resident stays. Therefore, the facility's revenue model collapses.
The delusion breaks.
The market's failure to underwrite senior affordability is finally catching up to it. And it isn't happening through some grand moral awakening in the boardroom, you know. It is happening through administrative gridlock and legal liability.
And these legal protections are vital. I mean, they stop the bleeding for the individual resident. They keep a vulnerable person off the street. But they don't cure the market's underlying decay.
No.
The market still wants to dump them. The tissue of the system is dying because you cannot replace the medical needs of a human being with the financial math of a real estate asset.
That is exactly Pree's ultimate clinical conclusion. The long-term care to shelter pipeline isn't just an operational hiccup. It is the terminal symptom of a real estate market that completely failed to underwrite affordability.
Yeah.
If you are an investor looking at 2026 and beyond, strategic resilience in senior living demands functional exit strategies. It demands a realistic, mathematically sound understanding of where these residents will go when their life savings dry up.
You cannot underwrite the municipal sidewalk as your contingency plan. It requires more than just building high-end amenities that look great in a heavy stock brochure.
Absolutely. Though we do need to issue a quick compliance disclaimer for our clinical observation today. Priyanshu Adathakar is a commercial real estate and hotel investment advisor. He is performing a financial and operational autopsy for the industry. He is not an elder law attorney or a medical physician.
Right.
If you or a client are facing an involuntary discharge, you need to consult actual legal counsel before attempting an appeal or navigating these regulations.
We're just reading the chart here at the desk. The actual treatment requires an advocate, because exposure to this level of systemic discharge atrophy might cause acute moral distress, severe litigation risks, and phantom pains in your social responsibility portfolio.
Well said.
So as we wrap up this deep dive, I want you to picture those industry titans still pacing the halls of the ward, muttering about their projected yields. And I want to leave you alone at the nursing station with one final haunting thought to mull over.
Let's hear it.
As you look at the next flashy, high-yield real estate portfolio crossing your desk, one boasting incredible returns on senior care facilities, ask yourself, are you buying a fundamentally sound asset, or are you just investing in the early stages of institutional dementia where the numbers only work if you pretend the human beings don't exist?